and welcome to another episode of Book Echoes. I'm your host, author Connie B. Dowell, and I am coming to you guys today with another author interview. So last week we had a tips episode about bouncing back when life kind of hands you something unexpected that messes with your writing and publishing schedule. So we're in bouncing back mode here at my house, just executing the plan to get back on track while moving at a slower pace and just kind of dealing with the life and family stuff that's slowed us down a little bit, but we're going to be all right. So moving on, the interview I've got today is with children's author Darcy Pattinson. So I always want to say Pattinson, like Robert Pattinson, but no, her name has only one N at the end. So I wanted to clarify in case you might have misheard that. So Darcy Pattinson, and we will have links to her stuff in the show notes so you can find out more from her. And she talks in our interview about a number of topics, but especially about how she set up her indie publishing business very strategically from the beginning, thinking about whom she wanted to reach and how she needed to do that, how she needed to set up her business activities to reach them the best. So if we talk about distribution, we talk about book awards. And I think it's a really helpful chat and you guys will enjoy it. So let's move right on to the interview. Welcome to another episode of the Book Echoes podcast. Today on the show, we have accomplished children's author Darcy Pattinson. Darcy, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. And Darcy has written quite a number of books, and she's put out a lot of great information helping other authors on the internet. So Darcy, would you like to introduce yourself and say a little bit about you and your books and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Darcy Pattinson, and I do blog at darcypattinson.com, and then my publishing house is mimshouse.com. And I write children's books. That's pretty much it. I'm pretty boring. I either talk about writing and teach writing, or I write. That's pretty much my life.
Yeah, children's books. So picture books all the way up through...
So I don't go YA. I'll do anything from kindergarten to eighth grade. I don't do too much preschool. I find those really, really hard to market. I am traditionally published. I have about 8 books traditionally with Harcourt, Penguin, Arbordale, places like that. And then I decided that I would go indie, and I've had a blast.
Yeah, a lot of us authors have had a blast going indie. So Darcy, before we kind of jump into the meat of things, would you like to share a little bit about how you got started on your writing career?
I have 4 children, and I was reading them children's picture books, and I just sort of got hooked and started writing. My oldest daughter, I taught her at home, homeschooled her. And at one point I got a book on how to teach kids how to write. And it said, if you're going to teach them how to write, you should model it in front of them. You should be writing yourself. Mm-hmm. So I'm obedient. I did what it told me to do, and I just haven't stopped.
Oh, excellent. So I know you've got some really great experience to share with fellow authors. You mentioned a number of topics, but why don't we start with book awards? Since you have won a number and submitted too many awards yourself, maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, because I come from the traditional world, I had some books that won some minor awards, but some very nice awards. The Journey of Oliver K. Woodman is one I'm best known for, a picture book from Harcourt. And it was a Bank Street College book they give an award for called the Irma Stone Award for books that have the best marriage of text and art. So they're really looking for books that the text and the art merge together into just an inseparable kind of thing. And that book is illustrated by Joseph Peda, and it won that an honor book for that. And so I've always known that awards were there. And then I have a book with Arbordale, a science book called Desert Baths, and it was named in National Science Teachers Association Outstanding Science Trade Book of the Year. So I knew that my books were in the realm of awards. And so when I set up my company, I really decided that I wanted to go for the school and library market. And that market can be easily reached by using the educational distributors. And one of the things that makes a book stand out in today's crowded market, the discoverability factor, is awards. So I decided to look for ways to set myself up for those awards. It turns out that a lot of the awards are given by the teachers' associations. So the National Council of Teachers of English, the National Social Studies Teachers, the math teachers, all of them have their own organizations. They all have children's book awards that would target books for their classrooms. And those are administered by the Children's Book Council. So I looked at the requirements to join the Children's Book Council. And so what I'm doing here is being very strategic. I'm going, who do I want to reach? How do I want to reach them? And what does that mean for how I set my company up? So not everyone needs to join the Children's Book Council. But for me, because I wanted to reach those awards, then it was strategic for me to join the Children's Book Council. So they had certain requirements that I met. There's a yearly fee to join, but it just all makes sense for me. And it's been a good decision because three of my books have been National Science Teachers Association Outstanding Science Trade Books of the Year. I just found out that my book, Pollen, Darwin's 130-year prediction. Just this weekend, this is the middle of October when we're recording, just this weekend, the California Reading Association named it a Eureka Silver Award for their nonfiction book award. So those things make a difference for me.
Yeah, congratulations. And yeah, that is an excellent way to stand out. And it kind of really addresses the problem of indies for the children's market. It's so different when you write indie books for adults, when you're marketing direct to consumer. Yes. Yeah, you have an extra step for children's books.
Yeah, and just strategically, when I thought about how to reach the school and library market, the teachers, especially the school librarians, care about these awards. So I'd already had a couple books win the minor awards. And then it's just a matter of being strategic about thinking, what do I need to do to set myself up for those? And so that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what advice would you give an indie children's book author who is just starting to, who maybe doesn't really know where to go from here, where to start learning about all of these awards? National Book Awards or something else?
Well, the Children's Book Council does have some of them listed, and there are other places that have maintained lists. So almost every state has a Children's Book Award. Arkansas, I'm in Arkansas, so the Diamond Award is our picture book award. Then there's also an award for young adult books. So almost every state, but each one has slightly different requirements. So the Arkansas Award, a lot of my books are not eligible for, because they require that both the author and the illustrator are U.S. citizens, U.S. citizens. So my illustrator happens to be British, one of my illustrators who's done a lot of my books. So those books are not eligible. On the other hand, the Maine Chickadee Award for picture book, they are looking for the best read aloud book. So that would be a different kind of book than the best nonfiction book, which is what the California Reading Association look for. So just knowing that they're out there, you can Google it and you can find the list of awards, but go through very carefully and look for what are their criteria. Because Arkansas is looking for great books, but I'm not eligible even though I live here because my illustrator is British. The Chickadee Award, I would love to win that one. I would love to win the E.B. White Award because it's for read aloud books. That's one I would like to win. But that's kind of what you're looking for, is what matches up with your kind of books and what matches up with your strengths for your stories.
Yeah, great. So great advice that a lot of the details that you wouldn't necessarily think, like the U.S. citizenship requirement, something you wouldn't necessarily think about if you're a resident of somewhere. So yeah, pay attention to those details, folks.
Yeah, also pay attention to their deadlines. A lot of times they will want you to send books to everyone who is a judge. So some of them will have 10 judges. That means 10 books out. Can you afford that? Is it an award that really helps you out in some way strategically in your business? So I don't send to everything, but I do appreciate those state awards, because if you're on a state reading list, you don't even care if you win the award. What you care about is you're on the list, because then the schools in the state buy your book.
Yeah, that is a very good point. There's definitely benefits even if you aren't the top. So, is there anything that you would advise authors to watch out for? I know not all awards are really super legit.
Absolutely. And I don't go for a lot of the awards, because I don't consider them to be legitimate. What I'm looking for is awards that will help me strategically to reach school librarians or teachers in some subject area. And so those are the ones that I'm looking for. I'm not looking for the Parents' Choice, you know, Blueberry Award or whatever it is. Okay. And then there's a lot of organizations who have awards where there's 100 categories and every category has 3 books that win. Well, you have a really good chance of winning that, but what does that mean? It means probably nothing. And if it costs, you know, $100 to enter on that, no, there's no way. It's not strategic enough. If the award has to be tied to an audience, it has to be tied to an audience of social studies teachers, or an audience of science teachers, or an audience of the librarians in Texas or something. Mm-hmm. And that I can strategically translate into sales, but I can't translate, you know, a strange little award, even if it's called Parents' Choice, that cost me $100. There's no way it's going to be profitable in the end. And it's not respectable. I'm looking for respected awards.
That's a very good point. You can drop quite a bit of money on some of these contests so-called awards that are.
I mean, there's plenty of legitimate ones out there. And I would start in your own state and look for those. But just applying to any old award, no way.
Yeah. So very good advice. So on the topic of targeting the school and library markets, do you have any other kinds of advice or words of wisdom beyond just targeting awards?
Well, so again, you have to be very strategic in how you set up your business. So yes, I'm on Amazon, absolutely. But I also have my books listed at all the education distributors. And so if you go to a library, school library, and you ask this librarian, where do you usually buy books? Most of the time they're going to say an education distributor like Follett or Mackin, or there's a lot of them out there, but they have school accounts set up at these education distributors. So it's just very easy for them to order through them. Follett says they have about 50% of the school market, school and library market. So if they're selling to 50% of the school and library market in the United States, they're a big one. So I make sure that my books are listed there. Usually there's a contact person that you have to send in sample books. They will vet the books and make sure that they're up to their standards. And then they will list them. It's just like Amazon, though. Just because they're listed doesn't mean they're going to sell. But you have to get them listed first. It would be foolish of me to apply for a science teacher's award if I'm not listed first, where the science teachers and librarians are going to order it. Okay, so I get my distribution right first. And then once I've got that right and I know they can get the book, then I will set it up to go to the awards. So the distribution is really easy, because Follett just orders from Ingram. where most of us do our POD books. So, and I sell about 50% of what I sell is paperback, 25% is ebooks, and 25% is hardcover. People say, oh, the hardcovers aren't going to sell, but if you're listed in the education distributors, even though it's a higher price and you think, oh, it's outrageously expensive, $21, $23, $25, you think there's no way it'll get sold. But the librarians are used to paying that for education books, and they will pay it if it's a book that they feel fits their needs.
Yeah. So, yeah, more reasons to just have a printer distributor that's be Ingram and CreateSpace, or Ingram instead of CreateSpace, because if you're just using CreateSpace, you can't really access this.
So for me, Ingram makes a lot of sense, and I just set up the paperback and hardcover for simultaneous release.
Yeah, and Ingram is really the only way that I know of to get a hardcover.
Well, there are other ways, but they're more expensive and you don't get the distribution.
Oh yeah, you'd have to get a print run and be your own distributor. And and that's a good point about hardcovers, reasons to go ahead and get formatted and prepared for a hardcover, because libraries, paperback books tear up easy, especially for kids.
Yeah, the librarians want the hardcovers, and I just get a case bound. I don't get the slip cover that goes on it. The cover. I just do case bound, so the cover is printed on the book itself, and it just works for me.
Yeah, that's good. And as a parent of two toddlers, I appreciate the case bound, because they are gonna rip that thing right off if it's a slip cover.
Yes.
It's going to be gone anyway.
Yeah, so there's no sense in me paying for that extra anyway. And then it would be, like a linen kind of cover. And no. It's just better to have it printed on the book for me.
Great. So, yeah, it gets distribution order. It gets set up for success with awards. Do you do any kind of advertising or direct marketing?
I have looked into it, and I'm not quite at the point of doing it yet. For example, if I did, every teacher organization will allow you to rent their list. So I could go to the National Science Teachers Association and say, I want a list of elementary school teachers, and I could rent that list of people, 2,000, 5,000, whatever it is. When you do that, you can send to them one time. But then I would have to print postcards or whatever, figure out how to send them to my website, what I was going to try to sell them. The postage, the printing, it winds up being, I could barely break even, I think, right now. By doing all that. So I've not done that yet. But what I do is I go to my local state council meetings whenever possible. I go to the Arkansas Literacy Association. They used to be the Reading Association, but changed to Literacy Association this year. I go to those meetings. I go to the Arkansas Association of School Librarians, the Science Teachers Associations, and I have gone to the National Science Teachers Association and spoken there. So I go to those conferences whenever possible.
Oh, great. Yeah, nothing like being physically present.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, and always collect names. You need them.
Oh, yes.
You need those names for your mailing list.
Yeah. So do you do much email marketing?
I do some email marketing, and I do have a newsletter, but I don't have a big list. I have 2,000 or 3,000. So.
Well, that's still not an insignificant list, especially if it's a good one.
It's a good list, I think. I wish it was bigger, but there are priorities.
There are. I think we kind of reached some of the end of my questions. Do you have any parting thoughts or advice for the audience?
I really want to repeat the idea that you really need to be strategic about setting up your business. I set mine up in a certain way because I know who I want to reach. I want to reach science teachers. I want to reach the school librarians. And because that's who my audience is, I know that then I have to back up and I have to do these things such as get the educational distribution. But if you're writing YA and your audience is teenagers and you know the teens are going to buy your book, then you know, you probably just need to do Amazon eBooks and go with KU. So you really need to think about who's your audience, how do they buy books? How can you reach them the best way? And then be very strategic about setting it up. I think people are not quite strategic enough about setting up to reach school and library markets. I think a lot of times that's sort of an afterthought after they get the hardcover book out. They go, oh, well, now it'd be nice to reach, you know, the school and library market. How do I do that? And at that point, it's really hard. If you aren't set up from the beginning, if you haven't structured your business in such a way to make that a natural part of what you do, then it's really hard. So my main advice is to be very strategic at the beginning and to think, who are you going to reach with this book? And then what are the distribution channels you need to reach them? And then, you know, can you add on anything onto that, such as awards or speaking somewhere or that sort of thing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks. That's great. Great advice, Darcy. So before I let you go, would you tell, remind our listeners, you know, where we can find you and your books online?
Yeah, mimshouse.com, mimshouse.com. And you can go on there and see, I now have about 40 children's books
available. Wow. Yeah. So, excellent. Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. If you have enjoyed today's show, I'd love to hear from you. You can leave a comment on the show notes. You can find all the show notes for all the episodes at bookechoes.com/show. And I'd also love to hear from you in the form of a rating or review. You can rate, review, subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. So until next time, happy writing!